Good morning and welcome to the November 30th Cyber Monday edition of Mountain Money. I'm Roger Goldman. My friends at Pink Floyd are still singing rather loudly, and maybe they'll turn themselves down. Thank you, Kyle. I'm Roger Goldman. I'm here with my guest co-host and co-host alumna, Renee Bodley Miller. Good morning, Renee. Thanks for being here this morning.
Good morning, Roger. Sorry for throwing you off there. I am not hearing in my headphones. We've got Kyle, who is working the board for us, so I thought your mic wasn't up because I wasn't hearing it. So my apologies for that. It's Monday, November 30th, also known as Cyber Monday, Roger.
Yeah, and I think that we saw a lot of traffic and people here over the weekend. We're hoping to hear a little bit about how we did on Small Business Saturday. I don't know, we'll have some stats in it next week. But were you around it all over the weekend, Renee?
I was safe at home. I didn't stray too far from home, did lots of hikes. But I can tell you on Wednesday, before I left the station, of course, we're perched right here over the liquor store on Sweet Alley. And early in the day Wednesday, I thought, man, it's not crowded here at all. In fact, Old Town seems really quiet. But Roger, it was really interesting. As the day progressed on Wednesday, the traffic came. People started walking up and down Sweet Alley. There were cars. You know, the hotel shuttles, the drop-off areas right here in the Bob Wells Plaza underneath the station. You started seeing these hotel shuttle vans coming through, dropping people off, picking people up. Every single parking spot in the four-hour parking out here in Bob Wells Plaza and along Sweet Alley was taken by 3 p.m. Of course, the liquor store was closed on Thursday, so maybe some of those people were coming here to the liquor store to buy their Thanksgiving libations. But it was really warmed your heart, affirming to see that our little town still has it when it comes to these winter holidays. By the time I left Wednesday, about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, I think it was safe to say Old Town was packed.
Well, that's kind of an interesting segue to our first guest this morning. We're going to be talking to Leslie Joseph, who is a CNBC reporter who's covering the airlines. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things that's happened in the virus has been the impact of the virus on the airlines. So we're going to talk about that. Who else do we have, Renee?
We have Jeff Jones, Summit County's Economic Development Director. He's going to talk about the ways our county's economy, Summit County's economy, is experiencing impacts from the coronavirus pandemic. It's going to be really interesting to get the latest information from him. And then at the end of the hour, we're talking to Shelley Marshall. I had the pleasure of meeting her a couple weeks ago as we were picking up our Park City CARES Act grants. And she's the owner of Park City Desserts and Coffee. She's going to talk about their new location at 268 Main Street. It's going to be interesting to hear from a small business owner on the front lines of how they're experiencing this pandemic and what they're doing to make sure they can thrive during these challenging times.
Mountain Money will be right back after this.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley Miller filling in for Allison Kulo here in the KPCW Park City Studios with Roger Goldman. Our first guest is Leslie Joseph with Airline Reporter from CNBC.com. At least 55% of Park City's winter visitors arrive by air. Almost 10% of those are international travelers. So there's no doubt that we are a tourist destination that relies on air travel for its success. In fact, Park City Municipal indicated this in their latest revenue projections. They closely tie anticipated sales tax with the projected daily numbers of travelers who go through TSA. In 2021, airline revenue is expected to be just half of pre-crisis expectations, and some reports say it will be 2024 until the airline industry recovers.
Leslie Joseph covers the airline industry for CNBC, and it's been documenting airlines' financial losses since the coronavirus spread through the world, with U.S. carriers alone losing more than $15 billion in the first half of the year. Leslie, thank you for joining on Mountain Money.
Thanks for having me.
Leslie, it was interesting. Over the weekend, the news reports had wonderfully conflicting images of public health officials telling everyone not to travel, coupled with images of long TSA lines at various and crowds at various airports. So did the people listen to the experts, or did we see a lot of travel over the weekend?
A little bit of both. Actually, we're at the highest levels, or we hit the highest levels over the Thanksgiving weekend in terms of air travel since the middle of March, so pretty much since the pandemic began. So over a million travelers a day were screened by TSA on Sunday and on Wednesday, really big travel days during Thanksgiving in a non-pandemic time. But still, that's 40% of last year's level. So airlines are still struggling, even though they got that spike. And it really gives you a sense of how bad things are, that a spike in demand gives you just 40% of where we were in 2019.
So 40% of last year's Thanksgiving travel. Is that over the whole 4 days, Leslie, or is that just from Wednesday?
It was hovering around that level for the past few days. So in some cases, it was like 37%. It fluctuates, but Wednesday and Sunday are the busiest days traditionally and appear to be among the busiest days going forward, or going outbound travel for the Thanksgiving period. So it was hovering around there. I mean, they even kind of struggled to get to 40% of last year.
Leslie, just to echo what Roger said, yeah. I'm surprised to hear that it was 40%, because given the media reports I saw, it looked like airports were packed.
Well, I mean, they're packed because you have a concentration of travelers. So a lot of people want to get out and still wanted to get out to see family during those periods. And the numbers don't show that they were as packed as last year. Last year, it's also one thing that happened in 2019, because it was just a regular year, is that because people are going into offices, maybe their children have set times that they're going to school, everything has kind of been turned on its head this year. So the actual travel demand is spread out a little further. You have people maybe staying at their relatives for 2 weeks because of quarantine restrictions. They're staying at relatives longer because they can, because their kids are learning remotely, because they're working remotely. Mm-hmm. So they have a little bit more wiggle room. But there are images of long lines for certain flights and in certain airports, but the numbers do not show that we're anywhere near where we were last year. Also, there are fewer flights, so the airlines have really cut capacity, in some cases half or around half of last year's levels, because they don't want to operate flights that are going to be empty. So you have a little bit more of a concentration of people, you know, competing for more seats on one plane.
I want to turn to ask about the sort of PR campaigns that the airlines are run. But before we do that, just quickly, do we have any indications of what the Christmas travel scene looks like?
Well, that really depends on where we are with coronavirus cases. And those, of course, have been spiking. And airline executives have started to say in the latest round of spikes and the CDC warnings that they're starting to see bookings soften. It's a little bit too early to tell, but it's not going in the direction that they had expected. We could get closer to Christmas. One thing that's changed a lot in the pandemic is that travelers will book a lot closer to their destination, a lot closer to their travel time than they used to. So they could wait until the last minute, which was kind of the MO of like a business traveler who doesn't care about the price because his or her company is paying for the ticket. But now that the prices aren't really spiking like they would if you're booking, you know, a week before, people are just kind of waiting and seeing, you know, will schools be open? Will my office be open? Can I work remotely? Can I take a few extra days? And it's kind of a problem for the airlines because they don't really know what's going to happen until the very last minute, like a traveler would.
And another factor in that psychology of buying a ticket is that a lot of airlines drop their change fees. And so if you buy that ticket and then decide, oh, at the last minute that you don't want to go, the COVID numbers are higher at my destination than I feel comfortable with, and I'm going to just change my ticket. How long do you foresee that happening? How long do we have that grace period as air travelers?
Well, the major airlines, American, Delta, and United, Southwest already did this, but they don't have change fees, Southwest. But the big airlines that would charge $200 to change a ticket, now they say they're getting rid of that. So you're starting to see, because airlines are so desperate for travelers, that the balance of power is shifting a little bit towards more consumer-friendly policies, because they know that it's going to take so long to recover, that they want people to feel comfortable booking, they want that revenue on their books, and if they change their flight to maybe even 6 months into the future, they'd rather know that that customer has a flight with them, and if it's in 6 months, that's fine.
I wanted to ask about the PR campaign and the issue of airline safety. You know, we're all told not to be within six feet of someone for more than 15 minutes on the ground, and you visualize being in a metal tube, less than three feet away from someone for a number of hours. Why isn't that really scary? And how are the airlines addressing that and telling us that it's not dangerous?
Well, the airlines have stepped up their cleaning procedures in between flights. pretty much since the pandemic began and created, you know, special teams to address this, something they didn't think that they would have to deal with before the pandemic hit. But they also really tout these hospital grade HEPA filters that are on board that circulate the air, you know, hospital grade. So as safe as a hospital, essentially. That, and they say, like citing some of their recent research, that it's very unlikely that someone will catch coronavirus from sitting next to someone even. But the problem with that is you're not just sitting next to the person. You were on a line at TSA. You might be on a line getting coffee in the airport. Mm. There are many other interactions. I mean, even like using a laboratory or something like that. And nothing is 100%. So we have a few airlines that kind of diverged on their policies a bit. Delta Airlines, of course, has the Salt Lake hub, and it's a very important market for them. They're looking forward to the winter, and they're saying we're going to keep the middle seats open until the end of March. So they're trying to differentiate themselves from the other airlines, American, United, Southwest is about to get rid of this policy of leaving the middle seat open. Those airlines are booking their flights full. So they're kind of using it as a marketing tactic and saying, we know it's not going to make a difference scientifically. Maybe you won't catch the virus, but it'll make passengers feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that there's more space between them and another passenger.
So Delta leaving the middle seat open through March. I had not heard that. I thought they were only doing it till end of December. When did they announce the March date, Leslie?
I think it was last week or the week before.
And that's a big, as you say, that's a big deal in this market.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you pointed that out. So the airline industry faces two threats from COVID-19. We talked about being, you know, the spread of the virus and the safety concern there. But the second's the economy. So when people have more money, they fly more. So what's the outlook for consumers' appetite for air travel due to economic constraints? Have you seen anything along those lines?
I think it's a little early to tell because there is some sort of, if you want to call it essential travel, kind of visiting friends and relatives that has started to come back a little bit. We have seen, you know, like vacation destinations, mountain and beach have been kind of the go-tos and essentially the bread and butter of airlines throughout this entire pandemic of people looking to get outside. And those trips have proven a little bit more resilient and are likely to recover a lot faster. The issue with the economy and the pandemic, you know, tied together is business travel, which is such a big part of airlines' revenue, even though it's not the majority of their seats sold. It is a pretty big chunk of their revenue, and that's expected to take much longer to get back. And the same goes for international travel, because you have so many restrictions around the world. That is much more lucrative than many domestic routes. So airlines are still going to struggle, especially the big network carriers like Delta, like United, an American that have relied on business travel and had pretty hefty revenues on international for so long. They're just trying to all quickly pivot to become leisure-focused, essentially low-cost and low-fare airlines and change their business model, focus a lot more on U.S. vacation and visiting friends and relatives.
You know, it's interesting we talk about business travel. 20 years ago after 9/11, business travel ground to a halt, and there was a lot of talk about whether it would ever come back. And within 18 months, it was pretty much back to normal. This time, the massive reduction of business travel has a different feel to it, which is we've, you know, seen all these alternatives to physical movement. What are the airlines thinking about whether business travel will ever come back to the way it was before, given the ability of business to be conducted over Zoom and other platforms that weren't available previously?
And their forecasts vary somewhat. I think the executives have come to the realization that they might lose some business travel permanently. And the Delta CEO on the last earnings call in October has spoken about, you know, that expensive business trip where you fly to Europe for a meeting and then essentially fly back, that probably is going to go away or at least be reduced to some degree. So airlines are conscious of that. Of course, it is their business, so they are outwardly showing a lot of optimism around the fact that people will want to meet face-to-face. And I think it was the CEO of United who said, you know, like the first business travel will come back for a company when that person loses a deal to someone else who went in person instead of conducting it over Zoom. So it's that kind of like YOLO FOMO type thing. And people essentially don't want to miss out. But again, like we're in a recession. Companies are not just concerned about the virus, which can get into all kinds of liabilities and, you know, legal departments involved and who gets to travel and how long, but also, you know, cost cutting. And a lot of like when a lot of expenses go away, even it's hard to kind of fight for them to come back. So maybe we won't see as much business travel, but the airlines think that it will recover.
At least
most of its ground.
In case you're just joining us, we are having the pleasure of talking to Leslie Joseph. She's the airline reporter for CNBC.com. Leslie, a question for the average consumer out there who doesn't usually travel for business, but just more for leisure and visiting relatives. Where do you see frequent flyer programs going? Are they going to be impacted by COVID-19 at all, or will it be same old, same old?
Well, we have seen, two things. One, the frequent flyer programs have become so important to airlines. Delta issued its biggest debt sale ever was backed by its SkyMiles program, $9 billion. So they're using these programs that used to kind of be these side businesses to raise money. So they have become more important. They know that their partnerships with American Express or an American Airlines case with Citi and Barclays and United with Chase are very lucrative assets that they can tap. What we are hearing from like a lot of the spending data from Visa, from Amex, is people are hoarding miles because they're not traveling. Yeah. And the airlines have rolled out, you know, you could earn miles from streaming services and paying your bill or groceries or these kind of everyday purchases that maybe before you would earn miles or burn miles from travel and for booking travel. So we could have people after the pandemic is over and maybe we're all vaccinated or comfortable enough that we're going to have access to a vaccine or treatment, where we'll all be rushing to cash in those miles around the same time. Airlines are conscious of this and often they have what's called like dynamic pricing. And the same thing is true of these frequent flyer programs where there'll just be fewer seats available. You know, it's not like unlimited seats forever and everyone who has enough miles can get that seat. If someone cashes in their miles for a seat, that's one seat out of the market. So airlines have a lot of control over those programs and what those miles are worth.
Part of the CARES Act was to provide a substantial amount of money to the airline industry. And at the time, there were concerns that the airline industries would take the money and lay people off anyway. Tell us where we are with respect to the what we call the bailout and what we've seen in terms of employee layoffs and furloughs.
Right. So that $25 billion was solely for paying employees. Airlines weren't allowed to use it for anything else. Over the past, let's say, 7 months, since they started to get the money, airlines have been encouraging their workers to take unpaid leave or partially paid leave, take buyouts, take early retirements. And they have done that in droves. I mean, you know, we're talking more than 40,000 people have permanently left airlines voluntarily taking some of these packages. American Airlines and United have together furloughed more than 30,000 employees, so a big chunk of their workforces. Starting on October 1st, it was the first day that under the terms of the CARES Act that they were allowed to do that. And the airlines were very hopeful, or outwardly hopeful, I should say, that Congress and the White House can come to an agreement on CARES 2. They were calling another round of $25 billion that would have secured jobs for everyone until March 2021. That obviously didn't materialize. And I mean, for a host of other coronavirus stimulus programs that people were holding out hope for so far. So those furloughs and job cuts did begin. Delta, for example, has been able to largely escape any involuntary furlough. They just reached an agreement on Wednesday with their pilots. The pilots agreed to take some pay cuts to avoid furloughs until 2021. So it depends on the airline. The same thing for Southwest. They had enough people sign up for these voluntary programs that they don't expect to furlough anybody this year.
Well, let's talk about another big player in the airline industry, and that's Boeing. The Boeing 737 MAX was grounded in March 2019 after two crashes killed 346 people. And then Boeing also saw the cancellation of over 400 orders of planes. Do you think Boeing is going to survive COVID-19 and how?
Well, it has so far. I mean, part of the way they've survived is the same way the airlines have survived, which is issue lots and lots of debt. So Boeing sold about $25 billion worth of debt over the summer, which is a record for that company. But the issue with Boeing, and yes, they have a lot of cancellations. Yes, they are ceding some ground to their main rival, Airbus, is there's a very high barrier to entry to create to making aircraft. So it's not like an upstart can come in and the FAA is just going to instantly give approval. You know, it's a very Coke and Pepsi sort of situation, Boeing and Airbus, and they really just dominate the market. Going forward, I mean, they are, like I said, losing ground to Airbus. Big customers like American Airlines, United Airlines are signing up for Airbus, a new jet or a long-range version of a jet they already have. They just placed big orders for those last year. And a lot of the future for both companies depends on how the airline customers, the leasing firms, they recover from COVID-19. Because if you have this low travel demand, you're going to have pressure on your orders for years. And that's what they're expecting so far.
You know, Boeing had a reputation for, you know, producing high-quality aircraft for many, many years. This has obviously given it a black eye. From your perspective, just how badly did they handle the 737 MAX issue? How do we get to where we are?
Oh, wow. Well, there were a lot of missteps. I mean, there were missteps in the development of the jet. And Boeing has essentially admitted that, that they had design flaws and there were other issues of, you know, through investigations, emails have come out of certain employees expressing kind of this arrogance and how they dealt with regulators and things like that. But Boeing has really had to put itself on the defensive. And at first, they didn't. And even as the crisis was unfolding after that second crash in March 2019, you know, Boeing said its piece, but there was still kind of this tone of, you know, we're going to say when the plane is going to get FAA approval. This culminated last Christmas, I think it was the 23rd of December, that the CEO of Boeing, the former CEO of Boeing, lost his job and the board fired him, namely because of some concerns that he sounded like he was dictating when the FAA would allow the plane to fly again. And the FAA, and they had this very public spat, very rare, and the FAA kind of came out and said, like, we're the ones that call the shot. So there's just been a lot of tension there. So Boeing has to recover its reputation. The FAA, which certified the plane in the first place, is also doing the same, or trying to.
We have been talking to Leslie Josephs, the airline reporter for CNBC.com. Leslie, really interesting information. Is there anything else you want our listeners here in the Park City area to know about airline travel before we sign off?
Well, I think if you're thinking about skiing, I did see something in a local paper about how the ski resorts are starting to open up, and they hope to by the end of this month. And one silver lining is there's so little international travel, and there's even so little air travel that local resorts might be able to benefit because people aren't, you know, you don't have that competition from slopes in Europe, and you also might not have the competition of people flying across the country to ski. They might choose to drive instead. So that's just something to think about as a ski season ramps up.
Oh, and Leslie, since you're a journalist, anything you want us to ask Jeff Jones, the Summit County Economic Development Director? He's our next guest.
I think it just, you know, what are his thoughts on tourism going forward? I mean, how is COVID-19 going to change how, you know, how important tourism is and can it be done safely?
Awesome.
We've been talking to Leslie Josephs, the CNBC airline reporter. Leslie, thanks for spending time with us. Mountain Money will be back after this.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Welcome back to KPCW's Mountain Money, your Monday morning public affairs show. I'm Renee Bodley-Miller, general manager here at the radio station, filling in for Allison Kulo. You normally hear her voice on Mountain Money on Monday mornings. And joining me in studio as my co-host, Roger Goldman, a very familiar voice to our Monday morning listeners. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning.
That was a great conversation with Leslie Josephs about the airline industry. And as we told you, who would be coming up? We've got Jeff Jones next. He's a Summit County Economic Development Director. He's one of my favorite people to talk to because he always comes to the microphone with really good data, Roger. He's going to talk to us about the data he's reviewing and the outlook for the upcoming year. And, of course, the big player is COVID-19. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Renee, and good morning, Roger.
Morning, Jeff.
Appreciate the invitation.
So did you hear our previous conversation with Leslie?
I caught the tail end of that.
She said one thing I thought was really interesting about the airline industry and what she was observing as a reporter, that mountain communities and beach communities have turned into the, quote, bread and butter of airline travel, and that those markets will recover faster than other markets. Are you seeing Summit County numbers upholding that?
I'm seeing some things that are encouraging. And as we kind of worked our way down through the questions that you folks sent out to me earlier, then we'll touch on some of those things.
So let's start with the big picture. In terms of where are we looking at calendar year 2020? Where are we sort of historic? How do we perform historically as compared to other years?
Okay, well, some of the big items that we look at are what we call our gross regional product. And for Summit County in 2019, our gross regional product was estimated at $3.6 billion, which is a lot of money for a small county. And within that number, we look at total earnings, which are earnings for the region, wages, salaries, supplements, proprietor income. And we also look at what we call non-labor income, which is generally what businesses make payments for labor, taxes on production, and the purchase of produced inputs. Mm-hmm. And then we look at taxes on production and imports, and we subtract out any type of government subsidy, which would be, you know, money granted by the government to assist that particular industry or business. And then we look at the number of people that are in our workforce. And in our employment data, some of the things that are really encouraging to me are the fact that our current unemployment rate in Summit County is now estimated at 6.5%, which is down a little from 6.6 in September. And if you go back to a period in April when things were really, really grim, you know, we were looking at an unemployment rate of 20.4%. So we've improved dramatically from that period of time.
Jeff, how does that 6.5 compare to the same time last year?
Compared to last year, we're down in total employment about 10%. That's a loss of about 2,768 jobs is the estimate. But compared to where we were, we are improving. And, you know, the employment, if you break down the employment by two-sector industry code, it's uneven. So for some industries like construction, where are both up in jobs since March, mm-hmm. and also up over, say, 2019 levels. But there are other industry sectors like arts, entertainment, and recreation that are down, 1,100 jobs since March, and they're also down 649 jobs compared to the same period of time in 2019. And, you know, in like the accommodation and food service industry, we're down 2,734 jobs since March, but we're actually up 262 jobs for the same period of time compared to 2019. So it's kind of a mixed bag from sector to sector.
If you don't mind, we didn't quite understand the accommodation and food. You said we're down 2,734 since March, but up 262 from what time period?
From September, say for the month of September in 2019 to the month of September of 2020. We are up 262 jobs if you just compare those 2 months to each other. But if you look at March, since, you know, when the shutdown first occurred, then we're down 2,734 jobs in that sector.
That's really interesting. What do you think is causing us to have an actual increase in that sector versus 2019, given the pandemic?
Well, I think that that probably what happened is that we see natural job shedding in some of those sectors as the shoulder season begins. And so, you know, that 2,734 number includes those jobs that we would normally see shedded. And then we also are seeing some pent-up demand where we start to look at, you know, people were so fearful in the beginning of the pandemic. And I think there's a lot of people who have looked at places like Summit County as access to open spaces. They can be outside more. And we're starting to see more people come into the area for recreation purposes. And we're seeing the industries that are related to those areas start to staff up in response to that demand.
Over the summer, we saw a lot of sort of agility in our business sector, particularly in the restaurant business, for example, people being creative about creating outdoor spaces and finding other ways to accommodate the concerns of consumers during the pandemic. As we go into the winter and indoor dining is no longer, outdoor dining is no longer available and we're seeing spikes, what do we expect to see in the food and beverage sector, which is obviously a very important part of the economy here in Park City?
That's a really good question. And I'm not sure I have all the answers for that right now. One thing is when we look at the tax revenues associated with the restaurants, then we can see that, you know, back in April, we were off like 21%. And then by July, we were off by 56.5%. And then by November of last month, then we actually, this month, we're actually only down 12.9% in tax collections countywide. So just, you know, like you said, I think a lot of the restaurant industry has learned to augment their offerings. And people have also learned how to take advantage of those offerings. And so we're seeing improvement in that sector. As we move into the winter, will that continue? I think that's one of the unknowns at this point. I'm not sure that we have all the answers for that.
Jeff, do you have any statistics from Labor Day 2020 versus Labor Day 2019 with those tax revenues? Because everyone seems to think that this Labor Day, it was pretty crowded in town.
I do not specifically for that day. I've not researched that anyway.
Sorry, that wasn't one of the questions we sent you ahead of time. But here's one we did. East Side communities, how are they doing? When we think about Summit County's economy, we tend to think about the Park City economy. But tell us how the East Side towns are doing.
I think they're actually doing fairly well. When we look at general sales tax revenues that are distributed, and remember, like tax revenues that are distributed for November were actually collected 2 months ago, so a September date. So when we look across the board, we can see that Colville's up 31%, Francis is up 34%, Hennifer's up 28%, Camas is up 26%, Oakley's up 26%, and Park City, who had been negative going back to June, was actually up 11% as well. For the month of November. So that's a very encouraging sign. And Summit County as a whole is up 23%. So I think that shows you just how, you know, people are starting to get out there again, purchasing things. And I think that's reflected in our general sales tax revenues. And it's also not evenly distributed. Just like we talked about the industry sector data and employment, you know, some stores like home improvement stores and grocery stores, they've done a lot better than some of the specialty retail stores.
There's certainly a perception in town, and I think it's accurate, that the construction industry has been booming and the real estate market has been going very, very hot. Do we see any potential long-term changes from an increasing number of people choosing to make Summit County their permanent homes, many of whom were previously second homeowners?
You know, there may be some change, but my personal belief is that I don't believe it will be significant. So far, school enrollments do not support the premise that such has occurred or is occurring. Other indicators that a person could look at would be like driver's license swaps from other states, car registration changes from other states. And then, of course, after the IRS tax year filings for next year in April, that data could also be available. And then, of course, just the declarations made to the county assessor as well.
And we're not seeing it on those declarations of primary residence?
Nothing that has at least bubbled to the top as being significant.
So, Jeff, Summit County CARES Small Business Grant Program provided grants for businesses with 40 employees or less, and those grants ranged from $5,000 to $25,000. Can you share with our listeners what kind of impacts those grants had on those small businesses? Do you have any specific stories that you can share with us?
Well, there's lots of stories where people have had need. I think probably one of the largest, is, or at least a story that stands out, is that, you know, we released grant funds in chunks. And so we started with some CDBG CARES funding, and then we followed that up with some non-CDBG CARES funding. So we had a total allocation out, I think, of a little over $1.4 million to both business and nonprofit grants. And I remember, like, on the first tranche of money that we advertised the grant program at $400,000, we had $1.6 million worth of requests on the day that the grant program opened. So that showed that we still had, you know, we had, and I believe we continue to have some needs in those particular areas. I also think that probably one of the things that really benefited a lot of areas, not just Summit County, were the unemployment insurance program and that extra $600 that people received during that period of time. In normal times, spending among unemployed benefit recipients falls by about 7% in most markets because typical benefits replace only a fraction of the lost earnings. But that $600 weekly supplement that was added to the state unemployment benefit through CARES, that actually replaced lost earnings by more than 100% for two-thirds of unemployed workers.
Ooh.
So as an impact of that, households actually increased their spending beyond pre-unemployment levels once they started receiving the benefits. And I think all of that helped us kind of smooth out consumption and stabilize aggregate demand.
Obviously, the number of applicants you get for those CARES grants indicates a substantial need. On the downside, do we have any sense of how many small businesses have actually gone under during this past year relative to other years?
We don't. We haven't. We have not looked at, say, our business licensing data and compared that from year to year. One way in which we can estimate that sort of thing is to look at the number of payroll establishments in 2019, and then based upon our total employment number, use a formula to say, okay, based on the number of folks we have in the labor market, here's the number of payroll establishments we have in 2020, and do a comparison between the two.
So, Jeff, here's another question we didn't send you ahead of time, and I apologize for that. What kind of conversations are you having with the resort operators? And do you want to make any forecast about where you see the ski season going? Are you nervous about the anticipated increase in COVID-19 numbers? And do you think that there's a possibility that we could be shutting down early again?
Well, there's always a possibility. I don't foresee that, I think, at this point. I think the resorts have done a really good job with regards to establishing their protocols and having an opportunity to learn about operations in other markets like Australia and South America, and were able to apply that knowledge base to their operations right now. But there is some concern that case counts are increasing. And of course, you know, I think most people would agree that what happens with the virus will drive a lot of impacts with regards to economic recovery.
So as the County Economic Development Director, what is your best case scenario for this winter season? And then conversely, what is your worst case scenario?
Well, the worst case scenario would be another shutdown like we experienced in March. That would be the absolute worst.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, depending upon the rollout of the vaccine, I think once that the vaccine rollout is established and there are fixed dates and we know which population sectors are going to be able to receive the vaccine first, that as we work our way through that, that's only going to add strength to our local economy. And, you know, there will probably be challenges as a result of the recovery as well. One of the questions you'd asked me about had to do with the amount of imported labor that we bring into our market.
Right.
And, you know, as people have been originally laid off, found employment in other markets, and we have a lot of pent-up demand, just like if you were to see me, Renee, and look at my hair, my current hairstyle between Oscar the Grouch and Medusa. So
there's a vision.
You know, so that's what we call pent-up demand. So this pent-up demand, you know, for employees, you know, the challenge will be how do we attract these employees back to the marketplace? So we could actually see wage inflation start to occur as there's more competition for employees.
So we only have a couple of minutes left, Jeff. And I want to give that to you to let our listeners know what you think is most important as they consider Summit County's economy in the next 6 months.
I think the most important thing we can do are to follow the health orders and to follow the established protocols that we've been handed down with regards to wearing masks, social distancing, washing our hands. Those all seem like simple things, but I think that they are the difference maker in being able to keep our numbers down so that we can move through the winter in a safe manner and continue to build upon our local economy.
So in light of that, we are going to have a two-hour discussion next Monday starting at 6:30. It's a Project for Deeper Understanding forum, and this was your idea, Jeff. Can you tell our listeners what they can participate in and what they can hear next Monday?
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity. We thought it would be important to put together a panel of questions put together a panel of folks to take questions from the public that relate to everything from recovery to visitor compliance, public safety, schools, restaurants, tourism, healthcare, and get these folks all in the same room at the same time. So if you go to Summit County's Facebook page and go to the event tab, you will see the invitation there. There's also a public survey there to where you can ask your question. And we will present those questions to our panelists. And any questions that we don't get to during that particular event, we will also make sure that that question gets answered by somebody, even if we can't get to it during the live broadcast.
And I know we're going to simulcast that here on KPCW next Monday night. Are you going to Facebook live stream that on the Summit County Facebook page?
I believe we are.
Great. All right. Jeff Jones, Summit County Economic Development Director. Thanks for your time this morning.
You're very welcome. Take care and be safe.
Mount Money will be right back.
Like the end of a good meal, the best way to end a good broadcast is with a great dessert.
Ooh.
And we are fortunate to have Shelley Marshall from Park City Desserts and Coffee calling in. Park City Desserts has been serving gluten-free, vegan, and paleo pastries, for the past 3 years. Shelley, good morning. Welcome to Mount Money.
Good morning.
So, Shelley, let's start with a little background. Tell us a little bit about what Park City Desserts and Coffee does.
Well, I'd like to say we have some of the best treats on Maine, but one of our niches is lots of vegan and gluten-free options.
And paleo options as well.
Yes, paleo and keto. Keto's a little bit more of a special order, but we try to have at least something for everyone.
So come on, Shelley, how can that be good?
I get that a lot, actually. I think when you use real fresh ingredients and organics, the flavor much better. And we use a lot of spices in many of our recipes. So I think you get a much more just rich and complex flavor.
So talk about rich, complex, and let's say bold. You opened your own location at 268 Main Street just this fall. Is that right? In the Rockwell Listening Room?
We did. We opened really at the beginning of August was when we hit the ground running, right during COVID. So yeah, we are bold, I think. But it was nice to be able to know what to expect. Instead of having a up and running cafe where we had to make a lot of changes, we could come in with those changes made.
And where do you actually prepare your desserts? Is your kitchen or your preparation space at the Rockwell, or do you do it somewhere else?
We partner with a lot of bakers, including Luda's Kitchen, and then we make many of our items in-house just in the cafe area.
And you mentioned some changes that you made. What changes were those?
Well, you know, we actually were really fortunate that OP Rockwell and the owners and the building managers had met with the health department multiple times to get a system down, and they were able to impart their wisdom onto us. So, of course, you know, the social distancing, but a lot of the tables and other things were already in place when we came in. So we were really fortunate.
And I know one of your customers who likes to go there with his laptop, use the Wi-Fi, have some coffee. Do you see a lot of customers like that, or is it mostly people just running in, grabbing their coffee and dessert and taking off?
That's a really good question, because it's a bit of a mix. And if you find out the secret during the week, you're really fortunate, because there's a nice trickle in and out. And so you can actually feel a little bit more of a sense of normalcy, I think. There's lots of space in the Jayco Gallery area. All of the tables are distanced. There's sanitizer everywhere. You are required to wear a mask when not eating or drinking. And we are in the middle of a new HVAC filtration system being installed. So between all of those, you can feel pretty comfortable. And especially during the week, there's hardly anyone here. It's just amazing.
It is unfortunate that you're not live with us in the studio, because then I would have expected you to bring samples. But let's do a little bit of an audible sample. Tell us a little bit of your favorite items from the menu that we could find if we came into the cafe.
Absolutely. So on that paleo train, I would say some of my favorites right now are the pumpkin tart, which has walnuts or pecans and dates and organic pumpkin, 7 spices that we've blended, maple syrup, which actually is a local guy who has land in Vermont and goes back and forth. So I know Auntie M's and myself, we both use Frenet maple syrup. It's delicious. And that's just on the top of my list right now. And then we have our kind of infamous Swedish chocolate ball, which is vegan and gluten-free. And then we also partner with Luna's Kitchen, and their cinnamon roll is incredible. And so we cannot keep cinnamon rolls on the shelves. They sell out almost every day.
What kind of trends are you seeing, aside from the cinnamon roll rush? You do see slower business during the week, busier on the weekends. And how was this past holiday weekend for you guys?
Oh, yeah. You know, Small Business Saturday was truly wonderful. We were so busy. And I do believe that movement definitely gave us a boost that day. It's completely unpredictable, I have to be honest. And that is very difficult. It's difficult for ordering and staffing and budgeting. And myself and my business partner, Joe Davis, work a ton on our own right now, because it's just really difficult to plan. I know Park City can be unpredictable as well, or there's definitely those highs and lows. And then you add the COVID twist, and it's pretty challenging. But like I said before, we are so fortunate. The building owners have been amazing to work with. I love calling this building the Rock, because I feel like it is our rock. You know, it's definitely been a way to anchor our business. And Jayco Gallery has been amazing to work with. Jude has been so supportive and telling people about us. And so we have a lot of backup and a lot of awesome friends that have been helping us along the way.
Jude Grenny and Jayco Galleries, they have been longtime staples on Main Street and just great community citizens, in our humble opinion. What is your vision for Park City Desserts and Coffee? What's your ultimate goal with this business? More of the daily retail or more catering?
I do really enjoy catering personally. Mm-hmm. I also think we'd like to expand our hours. Things maybe get back to normal or a new normal, whatever that happens, but possibly looking into some charcuterie, checking into maybe getting our beer and wine license. I'd love to do dessert cocktails one day. But for now, you know, we're really happy to do corporate gift baskets and deliveries on those gift baskets. So if you do need holiday items, we just love spreading good cheer. It's really fun for us.
And before we hear about your expanded hours in the future, let's talk about what your hours are now, where people can find you, and is there a website they can look at to see your stuff?
Absolutely. We're very active on Instagram just because it's such a great way to stay up to date as things are changing. We also have Facebook, and our website is parkcitydesserts.com, which is just about to go a pretty significant overhaul so that people can order online. We will be expanding our hours once we get snow. So I'm praying for snow.
Okay. We all are, Shelley. We've been talking to Shelley Marshall with Park City Desserts and Coffee. Shelley, thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, thank you. Have a great afternoon, guys.
You too. And we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. And an extraordinary thing has just happened in the studio. Pastries have just shown up from Shelley. Thank you, Shelley.
Ethel Preston just walked these in. Here's Roger begging for samples, and voila, they appear.
Well, on that, we certainly have to thank all of our guests, in particular Shelley Marshall from Park City Desserts and Coffee. We also want to thank Jeff Jones, the Summit County Economic Development Director, and Leslie Josephs, airline reporter for CNBC.
And we have to thank our sponsors. We love these folks. Jan's Mountain Outfitters, First Community Bank, Columbus Pacific Development with Pendry Residences, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, and San Francisco Design. It's Cyber Monday. You got 30 seconds left to talk about going online.
Before we do that, Renee, will you once again talk about our upcoming event that we talked about with some kind of development people in our
Project for Deeper Understanding. It will be next Monday, December 7th at 6:30, right here on KPCW. You can go to the Summit County, Utah Facebook page for more information on how to submit questions. It's going to be about recovery, health, economics regarding COVID-19. You're listening to KPCW, Park City,